Kia ora, happy te wiki o te Māori. You're hanging with me, Ruby Tui, today. And boy, am I excited. Welcome to Playmakers. Today, we have one of the greatest playmakers. I'm very sad to see him leave the Women's Sevens, but he's made enough plays there. So I just wanted to welcome to the Playmakers podcast, Alan Bunting. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure, and I'm blessed to be here. Seeing you, I haven't seen you for about almost a month now, Ruby. But you're looking very ātaahua, and I'm happy to be here.
Thanks, Bunce. For those of us, for those of you who don't know, Alan Bunting was my coach for better part of a decade. First assistant coach, then head coach of the Black Ferns Women's Sevens. He played in the Chiefs. He was in the Bayopuni Steamers. He played against the Lions. He what makes us watch their replay often. And he was also a very talented member of the All Black Sevens. So, a very well-established career. Very lucky to have you here. But let's get into the good stuff. First, Bunce, how's your day going? How's your lockdown going?
it's full on. I've missed family. I've been away probably 80% of the time in the last 10 years, and I wanted family, and I certainly got that. One day sort of off, and the kids at school, and then it's been 4 weeks now of 6:30 in the morning till 7:30 if I'm lucky at night. Full on kids, and my partner's working, still online, and I've got my young fellas. Uekā 5, Miharo 7, and Ngākau Nui, he's 10, so they keep me busy, that's for sure.
It's crazy, eh? Like, there's been a lot of people who have careers that are just all the time out overseas or away from home, and us rugby whānau, if it's really been a, it's been really different. You had a really good career in Japan as well, and the family's kind of always got to play catch up. But just like, I guess I want you to speak on whānau and like what it means to you, and the crazy, we've had both ends now and not spending much time and then being away for so long. But why is it important that we have these connections with our whānau? We could just go away and live the good life, but what's important about whānau? I know that it's your wife and your kids, but why should we put in that effort with our relationships?
Oh yeah, I think it's important, right? Like we get these jobs, and they're called high performance jobs, and they, the expectations on that is massive. We're really good at putting all our energy into that. But I know myself, if my heart isn't full, and I'm not leaving home, with the blessings of my family, it affects what I do at work. And for me, and probably in our culture, right from the start, Rubes, the number one priority and the thing that's always first is life and family. If you can get that right and that connection right, and far out, it's hard to get that right, let alone everything else in your life right. But if things are good at home, as good as they can be, and you've got the blessings of your family, you can be, it's so much easier to be the best version of yourself, whatever you do, whether it's training to be a sevens player or in a big organization, Vodafone, whatever you're doing, that connection to your family is important. And probably the real view of what the work does, the culture you have in your work, is the conversations that you have with your partner. And it's like that they really understand what's happening at work. Now, that's when you understand how good your work is or the people you're working with. And if those conversations are really good, and your partner knows you're enjoying it, and it's not affecting your home life, then you can be the best version of yourself wherever you go. So it's vital, that connection with their family. And like for me at the moment, when I walk near the gate, my kids are like, "Where you going, Dad? How many days?" That's what it's been the last 10 years. And I'm just going to the mailbox, son, just to check the mail. But that's what life's been. If I say, "Hey, I'm just going up to my room," they're saying, "Are you packing?" That's what it's been for them. So, I've got a gold medal to try and win back home, and a lot of stuff to make up for that I haven't been. And I'm really looking forward to connecting to my boys' schooling. They're at the moment, they're schooling, they're in full immersion Māori school, which is amazing, and they're teaching me. So it's time to get alongside them.
Oh, so it's really cool to hear you speak on it, Bunce, because it's all good to come on a podcast or come on a TV show and say that family means a lot, but you have absolutely lived that, and you've done things for the players in our teams, like let us go to family events, you know, weddings, funerals. You never hesitate. So it's an honor to interview somebody who I know at the bottom of my heart is living what they're saying. Before we move on and talk about culture a bit more, I just want to wind the clock back. You're actually not an old coach, are you? You're quite young, so it's we don't have to wind it back too far. But yeah, just tell us a little bit where you grew up and where how you got into rugby.
Yeah, I grew up in beautiful Rotorua. I was at Rotorua Boys High School, and I started rugby when I was a little bit older. You know, my sport that I used to play was football. I used to call it soccer back then, and cricket. You know, cricket was my first love, and you know, that's what used to take up my time. It wasn't until I was about 15 when I was playing cricket. I was playing soccer. I was actually playing soccer for our senior Rotorua team. And then, you know, a few of the guys were like, come and play for our under 15s team. And so I used to play rugby on a Wednesday, senior soccer on a Saturday. But then I started playing junior rugby in the mornings on a Saturday. So it was sort of all over the place. And I was like, wow, I love playing all the sport. And then in the summer, it'd be just cricket. And I got to a point, when I was sort of to the end of my secondary school, and I was there a little bit longer than everyone else because I wanted to play sport forever. But I was playing cricket, and then there was the sevens, our whakarewarewa club said there's sevens competition, and my heart was sort of pulling away from cricket. It took a lot of my time up, and I started loving this game rugby. So I remember missing our last game of cricket in the season. My coach was pretty angry with me, but my heart was telling me something different. So I went and played the sevens game, and I loved it. Eh? It sort of was everything that I wanted to play, and I had that little fire in my belly, which I sort of lost a bit with cricket. And then it was sort of that was me. I was off playing rugby, and I was a few years later. I asked Titch, can I come down and have a run at one of your sevens trainings? I thought, far, I can make one of these teams, and I got absolutely slaughtered. Eh? And I was like, whoa, far out. This is hard. And but I think Titch, what he said to me, it was see you in 6 weeks if you want to come back. And I was, that was it. And I was like, well, I'll go away for 6 weeks. But I knew I had to work really hard, and the one thing was probably running. So I thrashed the heck out of myself, and found myself in the sevens. That was after he coached me for Bay of Plenty, and I played with some awesome players back then with the 15s, and then I played sevens for a bit, and I didn't stay in there that long, and I wasn't probably the greatest sevens player. I had really good fitness, but some of the guys in there were amazing, and the one thing I probably missed was I didn't really have was that real competitive nature that most of you ladies had. I liked to be in a team where I sort of felt like I belonged, and everything wasn't so competitive, and so I didn't stay in that long, and then I ended up going over to Japan for 3.5 years, and I loved it over there. You know, my Japanese is better than my Māori, and had made some amazing mates over there, and got immersed into the culture over there. And I go back and do a bit of coaching in Japan, which was amazing, and then that sort of come to the end. Did a bit of come back to New Zealand, and met my beautiful partner Alexis, and started teaching at Sandpit Silverstream down in Wellington. And they said, hey, do you want a teaching job? And PE teacher, I said, yeah. Then when I turned up there, they said, can you take our first 15 on your own? I was like, whoa, okay, yeah, I'll take it. So I ended up coaching that, which was an amazing experience. I met some amazing young men in that place, and at lunchtime, rather than going into the staff room and having lunch, I'd be sitting out in the playground with some of the younger fellas and having lunch. And so that was sort of where my coaching sort of started there. And I then the sevens got announced Olympic sport. I was like, whoa, this is amazing. And Tony Fulk reached out and said, hey, we got to find some athletes. Are you keen to go around and find some talent? So I went in there, and with the help of my beautiful partner Alexa, she helped me put together a Go for Gold program, which sort of went through New Zealand, and trying to find the key attributes and components for a sevens player. And so we started off at Wellington, and we put it out to New Zealand, and we went through the country, and it was an amazing journey. I got to meet you. We went down to Christchurch, and I was like, "Ah, who's this young lady full of energy? I think you had purple hair or pink hair back then." I was like, "Far out. You cannot not notice her. Her name is down on the paper. There's something about this lady." Then went around the country, Gail Broughton, Michaela Bligh. I remember, I'm probably not allowed to say this, but Portia Woodman and Kayla McAllister turned up to our screening up in Auckland, and they said, I'm not allowed to be here. I'm supposed to be at netball or something." And then they jumped in, and we found them. And so it was, that was right back at the very start. We found all these athletes. And then I think Sean Horan got the job, and then he said, "Hey, do you want to be my assistant coach?" And I was like, "Whoa, yeah, I'd love to be." And that's sort of how it started, and how this journey with the Black Fern Sevens started 10 years ago.
Yeah, far out. What a crazy journey. You don't let us forget how good at cricket you were. You pretty much could have played for New Zealand cricket or sevens. So that's a cool part of your journey as well. And so you found all these crazy women. It was actually my street was red. It was trying to be red, but it was red paint and dye bleach. Sorry, it was really expensive, so I just turned pink. It was probably pink by the time we met. You found all these women who just were looking to be a part of something. And I do feel like often assistant coaches don't get a lot of credit. And bro, you were basically taking all the trainings, doing the game plans. It was awesome to be a part of. What were you thinking when went to Fiji in that first tournament, and we won? And you look back how you watch the footage, and we weren't doing anything special, and we won that tournament. And then you've got this Olympic prospect in front of you. What was your game plan? How did you take 40 odd women who want to be a part of it and turn it into the, because by the time we got to Rio, we were quite a structured unit with all our processes in place. How did you think to make that work?
Well, I remember well, before the Go for God, I remember sitting down with Alexis and going, "Far out." For some reason, I could see, because I knew about the talent in New Zealand. I hadn't really been close to it, hadn't met it, I didn't know these ladies. But I said, "Far out, this is an opportunity. I can see something really precious here." And then, after meeting the ladies and obviously going to Fiji, I was like, "Whoa. Far, like for me, when I'm around talent and potential and I feel mana, it's what gets me out of bed. Like, how do we really bring this to life?" And after that first Fiji tournament, I don't know how much we trained or whatever. I was like, man, just the talent, the desire, the passion, just the eagerness in the group. We had the older players that had been around the world for a while, like Hurianas, the Linda Aitonus, Hani Hirimis, Carla Hoepe, just some amazing players that were, been there, been waiting for this opportunity. And then some younger players like the Portia Woodmans and you guys and the Gossies come together and far out. When I experienced that first tournament, I was like, "Well, this is going to be something special." And I was like, and for me in that stage, I didn't know who I was as a leader or a coach or, so it's been a real journey for me to understand, what's important for me as a coach. And I've had some amazing coaches through my journey, some really amazing coaches that I sort of look back to now, and I remember a lot of the stuff they've done for me. But through that first cycle, I was actually finding myself a lot. But man, working with such talent, we're so blessed here in New Zealand. Well, it's been certainly a fulfilling journey.
Yeah, gosh, there's so much we could talk about in that, but it's quite important, that moment in history, especially with women's rugby, because sevens funding for women's sorry funding for women's sevens got cut in 2002, and so there was this huge gap between 2002 and 2012. And if you wanted to play women's sevens, it was kind of like this underground world. You had to fundraise and then just find tournaments and fly over there, organize it. And if you didn't win first place, you didn't get your money back. You had to fundraise all over again. So when we get to 2012, this 10-year hiatus of funding, and then people like yourself come through and get all the talent, like Hiriana Manu and Lindy Tunu, like you said, mix it with these new young guns. just an absolute ride. Like, it was just such a crazy ride. Was there a moment in that first cycle, that Rio Olympic cycle, where, maybe you did find yourself as a coach or something, or realize the coach you wanted to be, you realize the team you wanted to make, that, because you honestly, Bunce, you were, I can't describe to the people how outstanding or incredible you were in that Tokyo cycle, which we'll get to. But did you have a moment in that first cycle which made you go, I want to be this kind of coach, I want to prioritize this, or any moment like that?
That first cycle was like I certainly did find myself through that, and I knew what I felt was right. And I think in that first cycle, we had Sean Horan, like amazing a coach. He brought that program to life and set all the structures. I learned so much, but we had a different coaching style, and I probably got in, through that first cycle. Once I started finding out what was important for me, I probably got in the way of his style, and we probably started clashing, and that was probably the bigger problem there. And but I started thinking, I know what I think's right, for these players. And coming towards the end of that cycle, I was like, I really feel like I've got the recipe, or the formula to help bring these ladies to life. Which was, that first, especially that last year, was really hard. We'd done so well for the first 3 years, and that last year we didn't. We lost eight straight tournaments. But through that last year, I learned a lot, probably about myself. Really struggled, but I learned about what I felt, was probably the right thing moving forward. And for me, probably, if I wasn't in that first cycle, things would have been different, because I probably wouldn't have got in the way of the coaching philosophies in that way. But once it was sort of, I applied for the job and I got the job, it was, far out. This is I was so staunch in my heart about how I thought this team, how we could bring this team to life, and how can we bring the mana out in these ladies and set it free. That's, for me, leadership. My whole philosophy is, how do you unleash others until you're not needed? And for me, I probably wasn't needed for a while. At the end, I just wanted to go to the Olympics and experience it and see firsthand those smiles on your faces and those tears of joys. But watching you ladies go about life how you do authentically was just an absolute amazing gold medal for me.
Yeah, it's cool you talk about that, because as a player, winning the silver was really fun, because we knew we had it. Like, we had the ingredients, we just didn't have the recipe right. And I remember having conversations with you talking about leadership and culture, and I was like, bro, this guy's got it. He's got the recipe. I really wanted to follow you into battle, have you lead, be the captain of the Waka and show us away, because I knew you could see that potential in us. So that was so exciting when you decided to apply for head coach, because let's be real, you were a bit younger than all the other New Zealand coaches. You're Māori, you totally prioritize the culture of Māori, the te reo Māori, everything about it. It was kind of never really done before. Was that nerve-wracking for you? Like, how did you feel going, I can actually do this better than anyone else?
Yeah, I actually didn't think that, Reeps. For me, it was actually a scary place. And I'll speak honestly here. When I was younger, I grew up at Rotorua. I was adopted, and I was in a heavily populated Māori school. And I knew I was Māori. I didn't know how to be Māori, so I found myself pretending a lot of the time. And that was hard going, through that patch. But luckily for sport, which actually probably saved my life back then, and sport gave me a place where people wanted me on their team. And I liked that feeling, feeling somewhere where I belonged. And that's what took me through everything, and gave me an amazing life, especially right up to this point. But when I through that first cycle, I knew how much, at 90% of our ladies were Pacifica Māori. I knew how much their culture and their ethnicity meant to them. And so I actually had to do a bit of learning myself, and to get the likes of you and Portia and Gossie and some of our ladies, I had to upskill myself and probably find a part of me that was lost. And through this journey, I'm learning. My Japanese is still better than my Māori, but How do we really connect our ladies into something that is a whole lot bigger than just playing rugby, that way they can really be themselves, really represent their culture, ethnicity, no matter who they are, where they come from. That was a sort of the thing that I wanted to do, and I had to go and learn about that, and that's where the waka come from. And all of our language was around Maori, but it wasn't just Maori. It was like, whoever you are, let's speak our own language.
That's cool. That's really cool. And I think it's really applicable to this week because it is Tūkī o te reo Māori, and people will probably be shocked hearing you say, you felt like you weren't Māori when you totally are. What would you say to people who are kind of feeling similar? Because the way you made me feel as your player, I don't have a drop of Māori in me. I'm half Samoan and my mum is fifth generation from the UK. But man, I felt New Zealander. Like I love being in the team, and we didn't say one, two, three. We said tahi roa toru in our calls. It was a real powerful, empowering part of our culture that you created. What would you say to someone who's perhaps struggling with their Māori identity?
I didn't realize, like on my journey, and I didn't realize how many of Maori people out there that are trying to find the language and bring the ethnicity and culture back to life. There's a lot of people out there, and like in my mind, I thought that you actually had it all, or you sort of didn't have anything, and there was this massive gap, and you had to be really good. But through my journey, it's just the intent and effort to learn who you are, and you get massive respect for that. The courage to go in when you don't know and say you don't know, and hey, I really want to learn. That's embraced. And if you feel like there's a missing piece, go searching for it. And our culture and our ethnicity is important. And through this journey, especially the last 5 years, having found my real family and where I am and my marae, and having been able to take my kids back to Te Pākehā back in Rotorua and bathe in our pools that we're from, that's what I've always wanted as a kid. And to have an old queer come up to us and say, "Kia ora mai, moko." I was like, oh, that's what I've been searching all my life. So, it's never too late to go and, search that sort of stuff. And it doesn't matter how good or how terrible you think you are. No, today's the day, go and do it.
Oh, tino pai. I feel like I can say that to you for once. If Bunce is like ka pai, it's like oh good. But if he comes up and says tino pai, it means it's a really good job. So, yeah, I that's it's that's so that's incredible. That's miharo, and I hope people really hear that. And then another thing I want to talk about with you because I feel like you're not feel about this. I often get coaches right, and they genuinely are intimidated to coach women. They get a bit, they're like, oh, I want to show her this, but can I touch your arm or whatever? And they act a bit weird. And as a female rugby player, you can sense it, like you could have the best rugby coach in the world, and then he comes into our environment and he can't, he gets a bit nerve-wracking. And I'm like, if it's a male coach or a female coach, like just your knowledge can be, given the same way. I'm going to take it on the same way. But what would you say to, you probably get asked this a lot, but how is coaching women different? Is it different? How are you not so intimidated like all the rest of them?
It probably wasn't a gender thing for me. Like for me, like my purpose, I know my purpose really well now, is whether it's male, female, a cat, my kids, whatever. It's like, for me, it's potential, and that's something that I feel like, what is the potential here? And that's not just rugby, it's like leadership, authenticity, all those little things. It's how do I bring that to life? And for me, if you've got that intent and you're there and that's your purpose, people know, and they don't, there's not that difficulty in why is this dude here, is he uncomfortable? It's like if someone thinks that you're really there to do that for them, then I think trust is built. And it's not having that perfect, it's like far out, I really want to work out how to bring this out in you, and I probably might need some help, or I probably need your help. But if people around you feel that, then I probably have never felt that, and I actually haven't been asked, is that uncomfortable? But if you're there for, and your purpose for being there is the right thing, well, I probably have never really thought about. The one thing that I probably do feel, conscious about is how I address the players. Sometimes I've had been challenged, like, hey guys, hey
I
ladies, hey
know.
wahine toa. It's like, but at the end of the day, you know, if the ladies know, or if you, like, I've learned, if you know that I'm there for the right reason, it probably doesn't matter what I call you. And if I call you something the wrong way and I say I'm sorry, then it's okay, because you know why I'm there. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, that's so cool. And as a female rugby player, like I've never felt like a like obviously part of my purpose is growing women's sport, but being coached by you and the boys, it's like it's not I'm coaching a woman, it's like I'm coaching a team to be the best team in the world, and I'm coaching this player so they can be the best they can be in the world. And that's like I think sometimes coaches can overthink that, but it's yeah, you're incredible at that as well. Okay, so we've done Rio, we've won silver, we've learnt, we've grown, and then you apply for the head coach job, and you get it, and then you've got to pick a team, you've got to pick a management team. What's going through your head to prepare for this next one?
I had that sort of already, probably a day after the Olympics, or probably before the Olympics. The first thing that I knew that I was certain of was the leadership group. You know, in our team, you know, we've got a big leadership group, but that's what I thought was important. You know, having a group of ladies that have got all these different attributes and, you know, even weaknesses, and how do we bring that together so that we can. For me, it wasn't about me dragging this team or leading this team. It was about how do we get these ladies to be self-reliant, go on this amazing self-discovery and learning and authentic leadership journey to really find who we are and how we do everything in life, to a point where actually I'm not needed, and that's what I've always talked about. So it was the leadership group, and obviously you're a part of that, and you know how that mix is pretty amazing. And that's grown over time, because we've had some, you know, other ladies like Stacey Waka Flula come in, and Niall Williams, which, you know, have brought some amazing mana into that group. And then, you know, management group, Corey, you know, we've been, you know, mates since through school, and yeah, he was always there. He's always helped me through my life, you know, amazingly. And you know, to have him by my side was, you know, he does all the little things I don't like to do, which is, you know, being brilliant through this, you know, whole journey. And Stu Ross was right there from the start. And then, you know, Brad Anderson, and, you know, Nick, and the rest of the management, Nelly, for, you know, it just sort of fell into place. But the most important thing in sevens is you spend a lot of time, you know, a lot of time. So, you know, the people that you have in there are important. You know, just with the intent to be a good human being is really important in the severance environment. And then obviously expertise and passion and growth mindset are really important. So that, you know, in that first 100 days, that was important to try and get that group together. We certainly had the talent player wise. Well, it was bursting at the seams.
Yeah, I mean, I've learned so much off you and making that leadership group and making us be a part of it. Everyone's always like, oh, you guys get on so well, but we are such different people in the whole team and especially in that leadership group. But I guess bottom line and what you helped me understand is, you know, we're all human at the end of the day, and it's we all got the same goal, we're all human, so we are the same in a way. But one thing you did was when you assembled your management, like I felt like that was the same. Like you weren't just telling us to get on and embrace your differences. The management was the same. I remember with you know, you didn't pick one of the oldies in season, you picked Brad, and I was like, who's this Brad guy? Like da da da. And he just turned out to be the best sports guy I've ever met, you know, like such an incredible human being first and foremost. And Corey Sweeney, let's talk about him. So when did you first meet Koro?
That was back in, I think it was primary school, intermediate. We were both playing cricket, and my dad was, I think, one of the coaches there. And my dad had an old Cortina that sounded like a V8. It was just a broken exhaust pipe. But his dad had a Ford Fairmont, and it had electric windows and these like smoke lighters in the thing. And I used to jump in his car. I was like, ah, this is flash. And you know, that was it. And then even right through school, and Corey had a car and I had my feet. And then, you know, every lunchtime I used to jump in Corey's car and go back to his house, because he had ham and lunch and sausage. And all those things in his fridge. So he really helped me, right through my years, and we had an amazing relationship. I played rugby, cricket, right through the years, and then we sort of got through university, and I played sport, and he sort of headed off in a different direction, and eventually came back and reconnected again.
Yeah, Koro, shout out Koro Sweeney, good man. So yeah, you guys were pretty much best mates growing up, and then I remember being like, oh, how's this guy gonna go? Because there's coaches who go, oh, he's my mate, and then no good, but it's their mate. But when you brought Koro on the scene, I remember he was just humble as, so knowledgeable. He had his own coaching academy, understood the tactics really well. And I think, like, you talk about coaching so well that you're not needed, and I don't know if people at home notice, but there's no other coach in the world, no other team in the world where at half time you let the players, you let us talk and you walk away. And I know that's not easy. Corey, like, I can see him frothing sometimes. He wants to just jump in there. But I think, like, it's like that with the players, but I think you did it so well with your management group as well. You took a bit of leave, and then Corey and you ended up co-coaching together. And the fact that you had a team of management around you that could kind of take the reins, and then making us players responsible, that's a big call. Like, that's such a big call. Why do you do that? And yeah, how can you trust people that much, you know?
Well, to be honest, I think some leaders actually get in the way because they think that they have to fix everything. For me, as a player, it probably helped when I was a player. Some coaches on the sideline, we see through like the God's eye view, right? We see things and we think things should happen, but we don't really hear and feel, and we're not in the moment. We don't really know the detail or the real feeling behind stuff. And now my thing is, like, how do we get our, because I remember my first huddle when I stood out, and then everyone sort of looked at me and said, oh, waiting for me to tell you guys what to do. But then you started talking and working it out, and started thinking for yourselves and each other, and making decisions and trusting the decisions and working out what you're actually doing. It was a massive part. For me, leadership is empowerment. It's a big part, giving responsibility over, and that builds trust. At the Olympics in the halftime, I had no thoughts or anything of speaking. My job was to walk around and check the breathing of some players to make sure that they could do what they needed to do on the field, because it's quite hard to bring some players off. And I usually listen to what's been said in the huddles, and there hasn't been many times at all where there's something that had needed to be said hasn't been said. And if there it wasn't said, you guys would work it out, and sorry, you ladies will work it out. But that the thing that I've always used, and I learned this from an awesome mentor, was empowerment and leadership, giving over responsibility. When it is something really big, you judge it by the size of the cat, right? If it's a lion, it can enjoy something and destroy something. Then you might have to step in. If it's a little cat and there's going to be some failure, that's where the learning is, and that's where it started for me. And we got to a point where it was a lion at the Olympics. That could have been devastating, but because we'd sort of done it for so long, management, players, if I had tried to step in and say something, then I would have got kicked out. But me trying to step in and say something, me trying to step in and say something there would say that I don't trust you and I'm worried, which probably would have, a much bigger impact than me, So I think it's a part of leadership thing. It's something that you got to work on and grow, because what is leadership? Leadership to me isn't me making this team rely on me forever so I can never go and do something else. It's like, how do you grow people so they're self-reliant, really?
Oh man, just it's crazy, eh? We're sitting on Sky TV having a chat, but it's all like you don't need to tell us all that, because you've just shown us, like, you've just led us so well and given us such responsibility. And we feel things and we learn like that now, because you've given us the tools to do that. So man, our whole team, we just love you so much, Bunce. Thank you for that. I do get a lot of I got a lot of texts and feedback that you were actually at the Olympics, you were like running water on in one of the games. Like it's which is funny for people to see, because in no world would, a head coach at an Olympic Games, especially because we were not, it wasn't a dream run. We were behind a lot at the Olympics, and you're still just running out the water. Like people's minds were just blowing. Like, how can this coach be that humble and that trusting of his team? But to us, we're just, it was just another day at the office. You're always that humble and that gracious and that you walk the talk, which is very hard for coaches to do sometimes. Okay, culture. Everybody asks us a lot about it. You even do talks. If you're watching, you can get this guy into your workplace. He's done a few professional talks now. Why is culture important, and why bother focusing on all the people in that when, it's rugby? We should be learning tackling stuff, passing stuff, tactical stuff. Why focus so much on the culture?
Well, far out, but you probably haven't got 2 days to talk about culture, but culture is people. People, it doesn't matter where your home is or where you're based or the flash stuff you have around. It's about the people, and how do you create an environment where people feel like they can be themselves? It's like, how do you create an environment that for people can feel like they belong? It's almost like a that is a family outside of your family, somewhere where you can go and connect. And like I said, there's this mana and this potential in this group. How do you truly bring it to life? And for me, people talk about high performance, and high performance needs to be this and numbers and serious and hard and training and 9 to 5. For me, there's a part in that performance, and I call it heart performance. Like, how do you have the heart to your people, and you've got a relation, like a relationship with them, that they know that you actually really care about the person and their life, and outside of that sort of stuff. And having an environment where you've got that, and if you've got that, then the high performance, or the heart with the high performance, there's no ceiling. Like, if you've got, like for me, if you've got players that are coming in that really feel like they are contributing to something, and really valued, then they're coming in with soul, like soul and spirit. And we always talk about body, rugby, mind. If you can have soul, like players coming in with a soul, then, well, there's no ceiling what happens out on the field. There's no ceiling. It's just, what can become of that is amazing. And that's what the sort of culture has always been about me. How do you have a culture that can really unleash the potential? And that's probably, it's not black and white, man. It's hard to sort of explain. It's just something that, yeah. And I've watched you ladies, sometimes that I think there's one half time where you guys couldn't speak. I think a lot of our ladies
Oh,
were away
bro, I remember.
with the Black Ferns 15s in the World Cup journey, which was amazing. The 15s World Cup, and we had you still there. We had Niall and a couple of our leaders, Tyler, and then quite a few of the young ones. And I remember playing Canada, and far out, they were stretching us. But what I seen, that was one of the 1,000 moments, was just this absolute desire and refusal to give over, And I remember going in there, and you said, "Sorry, buds, can't speak." You had froth all coming out your mouth,
I'm trying not to vomit.
and all I said was, "Oh, no, sweetie, just have a drink of water and recover it. We've got one half to go," or something. But that for me, that's what the fulfillment for me is, when you've got just this motivation that just far out, when you've got people just giving them their whole self, their soul, their spirit over to the team. That's where high performance is for me. But you have to have the heart.
Oh, so cool. To hear, to just hear it again. I hear it every day from you, but to hear you try and explain that, it's so special to me. Yeah, huge. Learned so much about culture off you. And like, I feel like some people think, oh, we get on so well and culture's so great and it's always rainbows and butterflies, but it's not like that at all. We had massive losses. I remember in Sydney, we got spanked by Aussie. And I remember like one thing you've taught within that culture is in the past when we're getting spanked, it's like it's easy to start blaming each other and blame the ref and all this stuff. But I remember, I was quite comfortable in this team and I felt so good. Niall Nizzle Williams, she won't mind me saying this, she was getting angry as she does, eh? And I was just like, because I've lost not feeling great in a team, but we were getting a hiding and I still was still happy to be there. And she was looking at me trying to nut about something and I looked at her and I was like, Niz, I love you, bro. And she went to say something else angry and she was just like, oh, I love you too, bro. Like, you know, we had this really cool moment. So culture, you know, the things you're talking about, it's not just when you're winning. It's like when you're having really hard times as well. It really brings your soul out and creates, you know, the sense of true joy. Thank you for teaching us all that and passing that all on. Okay, so we've had this massive journey. We talked about culture and we're at the Tokyo Olympics. It's been a very different journey. We haven't had a World Series in a couple of years. How did you feel during that time and how did you prepare for that? And were you a little scared? Like it's the Olympics and we haven't played. How did you feel?
I was scared. I think anyone that says they weren't scared or nervous or whatever, you know, that comes from, you know, your passion and your desire to do really well and the pressure of a nation and an organization that comes on you. But I had a massive amount of faith. You know, we hadn't played the World Series, but I'm a real optimistic thinker. It's like, far, we haven't played anyone, but no one's played us and no one else has played. So, you know, how do we make the most of what we've got? And, you know, we've got an amazing squad of players and we've played a lot of games against each other and that's pretty good competition. And we got to play against Aussie quite a bit, who, you know, they're an amazing team themselves. And it's awesome that we got to play against Fiji. You know, that was one of the reasons why we went to Aussie, was, you know, they hadn't had any preparation or any games against anyone else. So, you know, being a part of their journey was really important to us. But it probably, the faith came from the players that I had so much faith in for so long. You know, how many times have we been out there and not quite got it right, but then worked it out? You know, I knew that this Olympics wasn't going to be a perfect Olympics where our team was going to go out there and smash everything out of the park and get everything right. It was going to be a minute to minute, sort of half to half. It was going to be one of those journeys, and every coach wants something in 20 ahead on the scoreline. You know, that would be great for the heart and the soul. But I knew it was going to be the grit, you know, the grit and the adaptability and the, you know, empathy that we showed for each other in those hard times and the leadership that we've been working on for so long that was going to really get us through. And so, yeah, I just had a massive amount of faith. And I always said that when we get to the Olympics, I wanted to be in a place the night before the Olympics that I just put my head in the pillow and I fall asleep. And I did. I had an amazing sleep before the Olympics because I knew we'd done sort of everything we had. And, you know, we had the people to get the job done. And, we were in a pretty, pretty safe place.
Yeah, I remember you just hammering that word grit. Grit, and it was really cool. We got to play Fiji and Aussie. You know, I know how hard it was for you guys to get that over the line. You know, organizing through COVID is a nightmare. The dates changed a dozen times more, you know. There was so much grit, like that UK game, or Great Britain game when we were down. Obviously, the Fiji game, you know, like it was funny because I felt as a player, and this probably came from you guys and management and you in particular, like it was like nothing new. Like I know it wasn't easy and, you know, but I remember in the Fiji game, like full time, and it was a draw and going into overtime and it was edge of the seat stuff. But me and Gossie talked about it after as well. We looked at each other and we were like, now we work, like, because we just remember you at training being like, It's 10 all, there's no time left, over time. Like it was like we were doing a bunch drill. That's what that semi felt like. And obviously, like, it wasn't, we were still fighting in our minds, you know, stay optimistic and stay true to what we were planning. But I would like to jump into the mind of Alan Bunting. What was going through your head in that semi?
Well, this is where my mind was. Like, you guys were meeting in halftime. I needed to clear up with Tony and the sub. Can we make a sub? in extra time, because that was the most, this is my job. I knew you guys were going to sort your stuff out. And then, I had amazing people on the bench, but I had like two people on my mind. There was Portia Woodman on the bench who had just come off, and there was Gail Broughton. So my mission was, in this 2 minutes or how many minutes of play, who's going to probably be the key to be on that field? And I thought Portia, it's guys. But I thought, far no, it's not going to be someone on the edge. It's going to be someone in the middle, because I know this is the moment. And I had Portia sort of looking at me, and Gail sort of like, don't look at me. And then I just went, Gail, Gail, are you ready? And she sort of went, yep. And then I sort of had, I think Portia sort of gave me the stink eye. I was like, yeah. And then I said, Gail, you're going. And she sort of, okay. And I said, are you ready? She said, yep, go. And then she went. That was my job. I had to make sure that we had the people on the field. And yeah, that's what I thought. I didn't even think about that. It was like, what's my job? What can I do to contribute to what's going to happen? Those ladies are all right. They're going to sort it out. And then, yeah. So that was,
Yeah,
I remember it vividly.
that's crazy. And for the people who don't realize how crucial that decision was, Gail Broughton scored the winning try. So that was like, that's the ultimate under pressure, being able to do your job. I've got to talk to P about that because she definitely would have been giving you the
Yeah, Porsche. Yeah, like that's not. Yeah, but Porsche had just chased down someone and emptied a
Human
tank, and was, she had just, she contributed to that game massively. And I had Gail there that probably had a lot more left in her tank. And like, yeah, but if I'd have put Porsche out on there, she could have probably done the same thing. But that's all I was focused on, is what can I do to contribute to what's next.
No, that's awesome because I really felt, I know there were no crowds and COVID's crazy. Like we haven't even all physically met as a team to celebrate or break up yet. Like it's a weird time, but that's a really good example of just staying true to the cause, focusing on the job at hand, which you've taught us all to do so well. And I know New Zealand was right with us. Like they were right with us in that game and you could really feel it, man. It was such an awesome feeling. Now let's move to the final because what you described, like talking about how you're just focusing on your job, that's kind of exactly how I felt. And then that French game, I don't know, like I totally rate France. I reckon France and Fiji, who were in the top three with us, are probably the most underrated teams. Like any on a good day, they could beat anyone. But I felt real confident before that French game. Olympic final, we've been here before, we're playing France, who nobody thought would get there. We'd beat Fiji, who I thought was probably the best at that tournament. How are you feeling before the game?
Yeah, I was pretty comfortable. Obviously, the obvious thing was we couldn't do any worse than the last Olympics. That's quite comforting. Whereas the game before, you could, and that probably affected our game, right? We made, there were quite a few uncharacteristic errors through that game, through people that have been around for a long time. But in that Fiji game, when we absolutely needed to, we did, and that's, for some reason, that's what we do amazingly. But in that French game, it was like my focus was like, this is going to be my last game with this team. I am going to go and enjoy this experience as much as possible. And I love walking down. Most coaches go over and sit in their box, and I like walking down with the team because I want to feel the noise, I want to feel the spirit, I want to feel the. And I normally get rushed over and off across the field, but I feel that. So I made sure I did that because that was my last time. And then walked over and always go and shake the opposition coach's hands. And I'll say, hey, enjoy this, bro. Enjoy this, because they're feeling the same as you are. And then went and sat down. And I wanted that game to sort of last forever, but it went so quick. And yeah, I don't know. Everything just was like, whoa, look at our ladies. They're in the zone. So it sort of went quick and wasn't probably what I thought it was going to be, but I enjoyed it. And then it was the after the match, like it was like, far, is that clock really right? Because those clocks haven't been right before. And is this really going to be the end? Or far? And then it was the end. And yeah, it was quite an emotional time, eh? Just the feeling and that. And then for me to know that was sort of the last time that I was going to experience what I've had the absolute blessing to experience for 10 years, seeing you ladies go out there and be you ladies was amazing.
Yeah, how you talked in the Fiji game, like you just were focusing on your job. That's how I felt the whole French game. I was like, honestly, I was struggling. I couldn't even move half my body, but I was like, this is it. We've come too far. Like, want to be there for the team, just do my role. And then, yeah, when that, you're right, it went so quick. I remember Gossie went for the line, and I was like, why? And then I looked at the clock. I was like, oh, that's the time. Like, it's almost done. And so, yeah, when that full time whistle went, I don't know how you felt, but my whole, for the last 2 months in a row, like every single day, 24 hours, I was always, what's the role for the team when I do da-da-da-da. And that fast day that went like that, we could feel everything, we could just feel everything for the first time. And it was just, yeah, you're right, that it's not the game, it's just that feeling after that I'll never forget. And it was really emotional for us because we knew that you were leaving. And I think the way you conduct Jersey presentations and the way you conduct our meetings, we were able to really feel that the night before the Olympics. And it's hard saying goodbye to a coach that you love and respect so much. And we all were, there wasn't a dry eye in the room. And so I think if you didn't let us have those moments or let us be vulnerable and share our emotions in a safe and at a good time, it probably would have got to us. And during one of those games, we probably would have been like, oh, Mel got a loser for Barnes. Like, so the way you allow us to be ourselves, yeah, in the day-to-day stuff, but spiritually and emotionally is like, I never forget those things. I'm like, man, I've felt that, I've cried my tears, and it's business time, and I've never had that with another coach. And I remember after the final walking around, bro, you were like, I remember looking at you from afar, and it was almost like you were glowing or something, like you were this, I don't know, this godly guy who just won the gold medal. And but the way you did it, Bunce, like a lot of coaches make a lot of promises to people, and you really walked that talk, and you did every. Remember that night after Rio, you said, I'm gonna make the leadership group this, I'm gonna put culture first, I promise I'll put culture first. And I remember thinking, okay, we've got the ingredients, this might be the recipe, and you did it every single day that you were with us. You absolutely did it. We're probably well over time now, but I just do want to touch on you're not afraid to be vulnerable with us, and you do seem like a superhero often. We can't give it all away because people pay you to come and say this stuff to their workplaces, but how important is vulnerability and being courageous?
Oh, far out. No, what's the saying that I've heard and I hear all the time? Great leaders don't think they're great leaders. They think they're human, because we are, right? Everybody's life gets tough, and pretending that it's not tough and having to wear a Superman cape every day, far out. There's only so long you can do that. I tried to do that for so long and I fell on my knees pretty hard. Leadership doesn't mean you know everything and you're above everything and you've got all the answers for everything. It's like leadership's always been, how can we work this out together? Vulnerability for me is so much strength. Having an environment where people can come in and say, geez, I'm struggling. It's important. High performance sport and the pressure on sport and then everything that goes on in life. You need somewhere where you can talk and be able to express that and talk to people and feel like you're not going to, feel like you're out of place or you're not strong enough for this environment. It's really important for high performance sport, but for every organization, vulnerability is absolute strength for me, and it's a massive part of leadership and a part of everyday life. So why hide it?
Oh, Bunce, it's an absolute honor to know you. One of the greatest coaches I've ever known. Created, I read on an email the other day, almost cried. Someone said, you asked about you, the coach of one of New Zealand's greatest cultures in the history of New Zealand sport. And I guess when we're in the machine, we don't think about it like that. We just think about being human, and you teach us to be ourselves, and you teach us to prioritize mental health. But I guess when we step back and think about it and the huge turnaround we had in that team because of you, it's pretty amazing, Bunt. So I'm just, yeah, absolute honored to be coached by you. We all love you so much, and just thank you for having that belief and putting your hand up to coach us, because you changed our lives. And we're so thankful to your family, Alexis, Ngako Nui, Nakira, Uekaha, your family. We're grateful for them for gifting you to us and, and letting you leave the gate sometimes. But yeah, just thank you so much, bro, for everything. And thanks for having this chat with me today.
Always a pleasure with you, Ruby Tui.